Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection. My guest this morning is Mark Purnell. He is the birding pro, as he's known in professional circles and with his writing, one of the most prolific writers of birds and bird identification that there is in the world. Good morning, Mark. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Rick. Glad to be with you this morning.
Well, glad you could take a little bit of time out of your schedule and be with us. I've got a copy of your book sitting right in front of me here in the studio, and I've been showing Tristan and other people what you do, and I haven't got a bad comment yet. How's that?
That's great to hear.
How did you first become interested in birds?
Well, you know, it all started when I was about 3 or 4 years old, and I received a green leather-bound or fabric-bound Peterson's Guide to Reptiles and Amphibians.
Uh-huh.
And that sparked a curiosity with nature and the outdoors. And over the years, that curiosity sparked with really birds, because birds are sort of a thing where it's almost impossible to, it's impossible not to notice them when you're out hiking or exploring trailheads. And that curiosity became a passion, and that passion became an obsession. And ever since, I've spent really the last 20 years or so journeying up and down and left and right across the United States, and I've only fallen in love more with our friends with our feathered friends along the way.
I don't think, as you said, I don't think you can be outdoors and not notice birds, and not
that's so true.
Be, you know, drawn to them and intrigued by them. Just the power of flight has enamored human beings since they started writing. I mean, how many millennia? They're a very cool species to be involved with.
That's so true. I mean, I think humans are naturally interested in things that we can't do, and flight is one of those things that birds possess, and we clearly do not, unless we're in an airplane or something like that. And I think that's just such a unique aspect of birds' inherent nature that just captivates us.
I did have a question, and it's one we hadn't talked about before, but looking through your book for the birds of Nebraska, I didn't find my favorite bird, which was an osprey.
And
I don't know if you remember how that one didn't get in the book or not.
Well, we have the 124 most common species in the state of Nebraska, and typically certain species are more common in some states rather than others. And
that might be why.
Osprey was right on the edge of that cutoff.
Oh, okay.
They typically hang out around in large waterways or lakes or reservoirs, and they're fairly common in those areas. But Nebraska doesn't have quite as much of that kind of habitat as some other areas, and ospreys just haven't really quite reestablished themselves in Nebraska compared to some other states. They experienced a serious decline, actually, in the 50s and 60s during the DDT.
Right.
They've been working their way back. So I'm sure in about 10 or 20 years, they'll absolutely be in the book.
Well, I'll be waiting for the update then.
that would be beautiful. I'll be the first to let you know.
Now, according to the bio I found on you, you know, out on the web, you're a lifelong naturalist and critically acclaimed author, one of the most published people in the field of ornithology, just on and on and on. How did you get to that point in your life?
Yeah, well, sort of like I was saying before, a little bit of it was this passion becoming an obsession for me. And really, once I decided to make this a career, I was really particularly interested in birds' behavior behind the scenes, as well as their migratory trends. So this led to me really going about a lot of research in the fields. I wanted to see these birds in different kind of habitats, different times of the year, different places in the country over a long period of time, so I could get the best sort of behind the scenes day in the life view, a portrait of every single bird that they're really that Eastern North America really has to offer. So for me, I think in a lot of other ornithologists in the fields, it was more of an experiential gain in wisdom over the years. And really the best way to do that is just out in the field, getting a view of those birds and trying to anticipate their next steps.
That I do the same thing. Of course, I'm come at it from the hunter's perspective, and I'm more interested generally in the game birds. But I look at all of them as a biologist and a behavioralist, trying to figure out what they're going to do, where they're going to be a certain time of day, all those type of things. And it is truly a science, and it doesn't matter what species it is, if you want to study them that way. But you can feel yourself being drawn into the bird and drawn into their life almost by trying to do that. And that's one of the things that fascinates me with it all.
Well, sure. And I think I would say, sometimes I say this, I'd say that I'm an ornithologist first, and in 1.5 place, I'm a behavioral ecologist. Because really a lot of nature and bird science is understanding the complex interactions throughout the food web, the ecosystem, how all these different things interplay with one another.
Right.
And I think you can really learn a tremendous amount just by really observing and understanding these subtle interactions. So you nailed it right on the head there, Rick.
Now, the title of your book, Birds of Nebraska, actually it's The Birding Pros Field Guides, Birds of Nebraska. That when I first saw that, I went, this guy's got a heck of a marketing ploy going here. The Birds of Nebraska indicates there, to me, there's going to be 49 other books. Was that originally the plan, or did that just kind of happen?
Well, you know, I've been all around the country, and really for the way I started is I worked my way westward across the country. And right now that line for me is I kind of stopped right around the Continental Divide. And Nebraska is right along the western edge of my coverage area at the moment. And at this point, I'm sort of considering and talking with my publisher about next steps. But really, that'll be something where I just determine. I determine based on input and my personal travel itineraries and research goals how many more states I have. But right now, I have about 34 U.S. states in print, as well as an additional 7 city and provincial guides for U.S. and Canada.
Very good. Another very striking thing to me when I was leafing through the book is the photography, the pictures you have of the birds. How did you manage to get such great photography all put together?
Sure. So I like that question a lot. I really worked very hard on the photography angle, and some of the photography in the book is mine, and some is also contributed by others. Really, for me, I feel that when you're showing pictures of the bird in its natural habitat, and many of these field guides will show sketches or illustrations, and I think photographs are the best way to show a specific bird species, because they give you a very realistic portrait of the bird in the field. But that only works if you're showing the most instructive angle of the bird, because if you show a bird that has, like a meadowlark, for instance, that has a very distinctive yellow underside, and you show them just the back of the bird, that doesn't really help you.
You've missed it.
So you really want to have a very instructive angle in the right lighting, in the right setting. You don't want to have a meadowlark sitting on top of a car. You want them on the fence post or the signpost where you often will see them. And I think a lot of those photos are mine, but a lot of them are contributed by other really talented photographers. And I find that some of these photographs just happen to be one in a million shots. And for me, I wanted to give my readers the absolute best photographs that could be had for every single species. That would help them identify those birds the fastest in the long run. And that was the ultimate decision there. So, yeah, I'm really excited about those photographs.
I think you accomplished what you set out to do. Even when you get to birds like snow geese, you'll have not only the white phase, but, you know, the blue phase, because people need to know that there is a slight difference, a variation there, and you've got it. You've got good pictures of that.
That's so true. And particularly for Nebraska, I find Nebraska to be one of the absolute best places in all of North America to observe migrating geese in general, and not just the snow goose, also Canada geese, Ross's geese, greater white-fronted geese. And really kind of in that early spring phase, in like late February and March, I find Nebraska to be one of the absolute best places to find hundreds of thousands of those geese. So that was particularly important for Nebraska.
When I talk to people and we're talking about birds and specifically migration of birds, I tell them, I said, look at the central flyway. And it has that hourglass shape to it. And if you look at what's under the narrow part of the hourglass, that's Nebraska. It all funnels through here, just millions of birds at different times of the year. So if you like to see birds, this is a place to be.
Right. Well, you're correct on that one for sure, because a lot of these birds will sort of make their way up to the Gulf Coast as they're coming across the Gulf of Mexico from Central and South America. And as they work, they were acting in the central part of the continent. Many are finding their way to the boreal forests of Canada or the upper Great Plains for breeding season. And they'll follow the Mississippi River and its tributaries up north. And
right.
Nebraska is square in that territory. So that's a great observation.
Yep. One more comment on the photography. Another one I was leafing through the book and I was chuckling at, and you had the gadwall, which, you know, one of our duck species, and
sure.
you had, and they're known as dabblers, and they're bought, generally, you see them tipped over and they're eating off the bottom with just their, their butts in the air, and you've got a picture of that. That is so, so true, so identifiable.
Well, absolutely, because, I mean, you see these gadwalls out in the wild, and you might see, let's say you see a flock of 15 of them, right? And you might see six or seven of them toppled over like that.
Right.
Their heads and really 60% of their body underneath the surface of the water, trying to strain and reach for that uppermost tuft of grass on the very bottom of the water column. So, yeah, full page of color photographs for every single species. And I think that's also a unique calling card for this book, because you'll have all of that real estate just for photographs for every single species. So it really makes it a nice engaging and instructive experience for readers.
And especially if you're new to the world, to the realm of bird watching and birding itself, and you see a bird and not maybe know exactly what it is, this is a very good resource to do that. You can identify it from the picture most times.
Well, absolutely. And this book also includes my own approach to birding identification, which I call the birding by comparison approach. And that involves sorting all of the birds from the very largest to the very smallest. And then you identify new birds by comparing them to those which you already know. So really, you can flip through the book, and it will take you from the largest birds to the smallest birds in the state of Nebraska. And it allows you to sort of pinpoint, okay, that bird looks about the size of a cardinal, and it has a yellow underside. And I guess that looks like it could be an eastern meadowhawk.
Yeah.
Going back to our previous point. And I think that's a very helpful aspect, too, for new and intermediate birders as well.
We're going to have to step away and do a commercial break, Mark, but I hope you stay with me, because I've got several more questions about the book and how you put it all together.
Sounds great, Rick.
Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Mark Parnell this morning. We're talking about birds and his book, The Birds of Nebraska. When we left, Mark, we had talked a little bit about photography, but I want to shift gears a little bit now as far as the book. One of the more unique features or items I saw in the book is what you have there, a month-to-month birding forecast, a little graph, so to speak. I think that is so unique and so useful to the user. How did you come up with that idea?
Well, yeah, thanks for bringing that one up, Rick. This is actually the first ever birding guide to feature monthly birding forecasts for each species. So that's a pretty groundbreaking innovation for the field, and I've really enjoyed receiving all the positive feedback so far. And like you mentioned, that chart allows readers to determine in advance the very best times to locate each and every one of the 124 most common species in the state of Nebraska. And really, for me, that feature was originally intended for my mother, as we lived in separate parts of the country. And ultimately, I wanted to create a handy resource for her to use when determining if she saw a given bird or feeders. And eventually, it grew into something much, much bigger, and I'm so very thankful for the positive response.
Just leafing through the book, and I stopped on the green heron, looked at the chart, and May through September are the most probable times to see it, which is very helpful for anybody that's trying to go find one. They know not to go out in, you know, the middle of February and try to find one. But as it, like I said, just so concise and so easy to use is one of the other things that I thought was a good piece of that, and how it adds to the book and adds to the usefulness to the reader. So very well done.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Rick. Thanks so much.
When you were here working on the birds of Nebraska, did you have a favorite species for Nebraska?
Yeah, well, I think when I was visiting Nebraska, I felt that one of my particular favorite species was the northern flicker. The northern flicker isn't necessarily your absolute most well-known woodpecker, but it's very unique and it's very common in Nebraska. In fact, I find Nebraska to be one of the absolute best states in the entire country to find northern flickers. And the northern flicker is a polka-dotted, multicolored woodpecker that is actually equally at home in trees as it is on the ground. And when it ventures to the ground, it'll hack apart anthills to try to find ants, and it'll even hack apart cow patties to find various insects. So they're really, really unusual and interesting woodpeckers, and they really are a Nebraska fixture, and they consequently made the front cover of my book.
I was going to say, that's right on the front cover.
Absolutely.
When I was leafing through, and you mentioned it before, you start with the largest birds and then work toward the smallest birds.
Right.
Another one of my favorites, and it's just due to the emphasis we put on it around here with their migration in the spring, is the sandhill crane. And that one, have you made it out here during one of the migration periods?
Absolutely, yes. So, I mean, you'll have about 500,000 cranes congregating on that Platte River, and as well as in the nearby agricultural fields. And that was one of my absolute favorite sites on the road.
Yeah.
I find that really the sandhill crane migration in Nebraska, I put that right there with the tree swallow migration in Connecticut. It's one of the top two events in the entirety of North America. And residents of North Platte have the spectacle right in front of them every spring. So
exactly. We'll have
such a beautiful thing.
Of the 500,000 to 600,000 birds that come, cranes that come through the state, we probably will have 160,000, 175,000 that are within, 5 minutes of North Platte driving. You can go see them. It's an amazing time. I don't know how many thousands of pictures I have of cranes. I never seem to tire of them. But they are a very interesting bird, and quite intriguing, just their sound. And again, as a biologist, just the fact that they sounded cool and different wasn't enough. I had to go find out why. And ultimately, I found out that their trachea is about a third longer than it really needs to be. It actually coils in the chest, so you have kind of a, like, the coils in a French horn. You have that kind of effect. And it's just, those type of things are amazing to me.
And it does have a little bit of that timbre to the call. There's a rattling or a bugling
very
aspect to the call. And I remember the first time I ever saw a flock of sandhill cranes many years ago. It was on a small field in Pennsylvania. And I was actually visiting that field to look for green herons, incidentally enough. And I heard some bugling in the distance, and all of a sudden there were about 80 or 90 sandhill cranes that just soared overhead in full view, making numerous calls, and they were actually breeding nearby. And that was one of the really most beautiful introductions to birding in my early childhood that I can remember. So I
Very
think
nice.
Sandhill cranes are just something that really shouldn't be taken for granted in central Nebraska. And if you look at my monthly birding forecast for the state, you can see that, in March and April, that's a real sweet spot to see them. And
right.
That's a really helpful resource for people who are just trying to get out in the outdoors and experience nature a little bit.
Exactly. I'm looking at the chart right now. February's got a little bit of a bar, but March is the peak, and April as they make their way, they're here to rest a little bit, and they come for the wet meadows and particularly the protein that they can get.
Absolutely.
And that translates to what they need for eggshell development when they get to their breeding grounds. Where can a person find your book?
Sure. So my books, including Birds of Nebraska, are available with all major online retailers, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. And in addition, some select independent booksellers are selling them as well. It's best to call in advance for those. But all major online retailers are selling the books, so that's a great start right there.
Very good. Mark, I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. I'm definitely going to have you on again sometime and maybe talk more about a specific bird.
Or a migration pattern. Your choice. Dealer's choice.
There you go. And behavior. We talked about that before, but bird behavior
absolutely.
And some of my favorite species for that is, it sounded like yours as well. So anyway,
Pandora's box, Rick.
Yes. Never get away from it.
Find birds in Nebraska, and you'll find that too.
Thank you very much, and you have a great Memorial Day weekend.
Thank you. You too, Rick. Absolutely. Have a wonderful weekend.
That's it for this week, folks. We'll see you next time on another edition of the Outdoor Connection.